Exactly. Hi, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is day one for me at Observe Hack Make 2013, and the very first tent that I come across is a lockpick tent. Surely this is illegal.
No, it's perfectly legal in most states and most countries.
Okay, hi. And your name is?
My name's Nigel.
Hi, Nigel. So are you having a good day?
Not bad. It's very warm.
It is a bit hot, but that's probably no harm. So I'm just looking at the tent here, and on one side it's you got a shop, on the other side you got a big long row of tables, and you've got people there trying to pick locks, I imagine.
Mostly, yeah. Some with more success than others. We've got everyone from like some little kids down there who are probably about 6 or 7, right the way up to people who are 60 or 70 probably. I don't know. No one quite that old in here at the moment.
So are you a locksmith by trade or?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And what made you, why do you think lockpicking is such a hacking thing to do?
People love it. It's an intellectual challenge. All the different measures of security that are around, so many of them are so poor. We sort of show the basic principle and then people work it out for themselves.
I often found it very interesting, you know, you go into a data center and they've got the weighing scales and the one turnstile, and then all the racks are locked with the same Dell key that...
Yeah. Yesterday, the Fox IT crowd, they use Abloy ProTec, very high-end lock, and we were talking about it, and I said, not like your fridge, though. And they looked, it's like, oh, yeah. And Hanfei said, yeah, Nigel can pick that in 15 seconds. So.
Yeah, can you?
Yeah, I picked it to lock, so then they can open the fridge, and it took rather longer to unlock it again.
So where do you start? How would I go about getting interested in locks, and how do you begin? What do you say to new people coming over here?
Well, it's pretty hands-on, so you can read stuff about it online and do, but it's a lot more difficult to sort of conceptualize what's going on without a lock in your hand. And to make it easy for beginners, we've got some trick locks. So they start with everything from literally one pin right the way up to 15.
Can you explain kind of one-on-one how a lock works and then how you pick it?
Basically, a lock, if you imagine you had a bolted door, if you opened the first bolt, then the second bolt, then the third bolt until the door opens, you're kind of doing that with a lock. Except you can open the bolt too far.
Right, okay.
Basically, you move whatever's in the way out the way, and eventually once you've moved everything that's in the way out the way correctly, it opens.
So would I be correct in saying you would typically have 4 cylinders, and then in those cylinders there are 2 pins of varying heights with a spring underneath?
You could have essentially any number. You start with, on a door, we generally have 4 or more. Anything high security these days has at least 6. And yeah, they are each pin, that's the number of pin stacks. Each pin stack is 2 or more pins driven by a spring. So when the key comes in, it moves that pin stack up and down. And basically you're trying to find the line in the middle called the shear line, which is where the two parts can move apart. If you go too high, the bottom pin will block it. And if you go too low, the top pin blocks it. And when there's no key in there, it's always far too low, so locks it completely.
Okay, so how would I begin?
A hairpin.
We've got locks and tools and people to teach you, so, if people want to come to Lockpicking Village, come and have a go.
Yeah, it seems like an excellent thing to do. In the movies, people use hairpins and stuff. Has that ever happened?
Hairpins aren't very good, they're not that strong, and you have to beat them with a hammer to get them flat and stuff. But bits of windscreen wiper blade, they work really well.
Oh, okay, good to know. Okay, well, thanks very much. I might try this now. And tune in later on for another report from OHM 2013. Hi, everybody. Yes, I'm in a tent here at OHM 2013 with...
Johan, Iquitas.
And Stitch.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well for the weather and the insane shit we're doing here.
Yes. Right, just to give people some context, we're in a field. The field is surrounded by trees. There are loads and loads of camp tents and event tents of every sort. We're in a scaffold tower. Who built this?
The builds is from the Rainbow Island crew and a lot of volunteers from OHM 2013. This is supposed to be and will look like a castle tonight. We have four big scaffold towers where you can sit inside and play games. We've got a large living room, an arcade with pinball machine, pinball machines, and a retro gaming tent.
Tell us about that.
Well, the arcade was most interesting because logistic nightmares and everything. We've got five pinball machines set up and six arcade cabinets, including an original Asteroids and a Neo Geo machine. We've got five pinball machines, including one that is that uses a compressor for flippers and has completely been revised. Everything electronically inside has been stripped and replaced with PLCs and other mechanics that are more of this age.
Okay, so more you updated it from what it was originally to what it is now?
Yeah, from it was a school project from another team, and they changed it from an original arcade Defender machine to something that is technically far more superior and more beautiful, and they engineered all themselves, and they wanted to do this, they wanted to display it here, so it's here right now, and we just found a compressor, so from tonight you'll be able to play it.
So it needs compressed air in order to operate?
Exactly.
Why?
Because they can.
Excellent answer, excellent answer. So Rainbow Island, why is it called Rainbow Island?
Well, we started with the name Leisure Island, and the problem with that is that it changes to Pleasure Island, and that has a connotation with brothels and prostitution. So we didn't really want to promote that on OHM, and we changed the name to Rainbow Island from the game Rainbow Island.
Uh-huh.
And it is a much more inspiring name also, because it allows us to use colors in a black and white team, because OHM has a black and white team.
Yep.
So during the day, all the scaffolding towers are wrapped in white plastic wrap, and all the fences are also white. And in the night, we're using about 40 to 60 projectors to make the entire castle look like an ocean of colored lights and games and sort of a game heaven.
Bit like the 8-bit scene, I suppose?
I don't know. I've never seen such a project before.
Okay.
At least not on this scale. So it feels like a first. And it's very special in that regard. And especially on a Hacker Congress, where production like these rarely happen. And this is the first time such a thing just for entertainment and relaxation is scheduled on a Hacker Congress in the Netherlands.
Okay, cool. How many many of these have you been at?
This is also how much? In event numbers?
Yeah.
20 or something. Okay. For the awesome retro crew and the people that do the retro gaming. It's event number 20. We did the first big one in Germany, CCC 2011, and it was an instant hit, and it was really great. So here we are again.
And I've been joined by
Jopje.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
And what have you done for the event?
We're co-conspirators in the whole concept. It was Stitch's idea, but we had bi-weekly meetings to give it form and brainstorm on the concept and adding ideas and see what's feasible and what's not. And it's been a growing process for 6 months, yeah. 8 months, something like that. And it's something that grew from a little seed, little idea that Stitch had, that it had to be awesome. And we made it awesome.
So I'm just going to mosey around here and have a look over at the other side. So I'm standing here in one of the corner tents, and we're surrounded by a moat anyway, because there's
You have to have a moat.
You have to have a moat. It's a fucking island. Yeah. It's going to be a castle, so you're going to have a moat. So 1, 2, 3, and presumably 4 towers. And inside of that is all sorts of tents. We've got the retro gaming tent.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
The tower on the right rear is the Commodore 64 and Amiga tent.
Okay.
And it has Amiga 500s and etc. over there.
Uh-huh. Thanks.
Then you walk this to our direction. That's the south side on the right. You pass the retro gaming tent and some party tents for tonight.
Uh-huh.
Then it's where we are. Here's an 8-player console, and tonight we're going to do a brainwave screensaver thing. Somebody brought a brainwave analysis device, and we can connect this to a projector, so you can visualize your brainwaves, and you can see how other brainwaves...
I know a lot of people are going to be rewinding that. That is a brainwave analysis thing,
yeah.
And you're going to do a screensaver based on that.
Yeah. Somebody built a screensaver based on that, and it will operate tonight, and it will be linked to other brainwaves in the world, over the world. And there's someone from Brazil that made the device,
yeah.
And he will also join, so you can see the brainwave from someone from Brazil also. So he made
awesome.
So at the same time, and it makes a screensaver from this with a lot of color and beautiful thing. And the nice thing is that for everyone it looks different, because everyone has different thinking patterns and different brain structure. So that's going to be really interesting.
I imagine mine would be very dull and boring, kind of a flat line. Who paid for all this stuff?
You.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Yes.
Well, we got a very small budget, and we stretched it to the max.
Yeah.
And we stretched
it. And then we stretched it some more.
We're very tactical buyers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's one thing that is really, really important, that all the retro gaming and all the content is mostly donated by everyone that loves what we're doing.
We're
doing this for years now, so... people just give stuff and say, you can do this and you can use this more than we do, and then it appears here. So we brought the entire truck of everything we could bring to here, just because to say hi, thank you.
Awesome. So if you're into gaming and too late, this event is over, but yeah, that was your own fault.
Yeah.
And you are a crocodile?
Yeah, I'm a crocodile.
Yes, with the beer bottle.
Yeah, underneath. I'm the security of the event.
Okay, that's great to know. You've been in the moat earlier, I saw.
Yeah, so nobody goes swimming here, but it's not because it's not allowed.
Oh, that is actually a bummer. So what's the wooden thing in the middle here for?
Let's walk around. First the entrance gate on the left.
Oh,
it's the wind. Oh, yeah.
I'll put on my wind condom.
Push. First you see the entrance gates with the designed flag by Job.
Yeah.
And we've got on every tower, there are 6 towers here, and 2 smaller ones, there's a flag pole with a flag, Rainbow Island.
Yes.
Megalomania +++.
Uh-huh.
If you walk further, you see the round thing. It's supposed to be a container for Kinex and other toys, but they haven't arrived yet, so...
Oh, bummer.
Maybe it will, and somebody will fix it with a carpet knife, and the details will stand. If you continue walking, and then you see the tower on the left side here. It is designated for ponies and bronies.
Looking at Nido behind me.
Yeah. He supplied some of the stuff over there, some paintings, and... they also had installed a homebrew console over there. It's called There Shall Be Lansing, and it's a game for the PC, I guess, that works on Xbox controllers. I haven't played it yet because they set it up last night, and I'm not that awake yet, that long awake yet, but I'll try it. They had a lot of positive reviews, I heard, so it's good to have it here.
And then the big white tent?
Yeah, then you arrive at the arcade, and the arcade,
You can go ahead before, and play. Yeah, it has. You need to put in coins.
No. It's all free to play, of course. And it has the Angel's Buck, the duck, pond.
Yeah.
It has a duck in water, and with fans, and you can control the fans over the internet, so the duck can move through a maze.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And there's also enormous video wall that arrived.
Yeah.
It's about 5 meters wide by two high. And with some luck, it will operate. And otherwise, it just is to troll the logistics people, because it's huge. And troll ourselves in the end, because we have to store it somewhere.
And we have a Lego pool. There's a play pool supposed to be filled with Lego.
Yeah.
I don't know when it's going to arrive, but the idea was that there's a big donation of Lego blocks, and we made a little swimming pool out of it. So
there are a lot of kids around. Yeah, I've noticed.
Yeah, there's a kid storage, but I think we are the kid storage now.
Yes. I'm beginning to suspect that. So what time does this start?
It's open for business, but it looks a little deserted here because the game is not functioning and it's not late at night, so it's just laid back. It's far too hot to do anything now.
Yeah.
So I don't suppose it's you only see people like
wait until this afternoon. Yeah.
There's another great setup that's over there next to the arcade. It's paintball gun with a randomizer, and it fires on 6666, and you see it can fire, and every second or so the code changes, so you might be fired at if you walk over there. It might hurt.
Okay.
more is the there's another tower on the far left north side.
I see a quadcopter in the air.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's
that's just
they're coming to observe you guys. Yeah. So that
and that's the temporary storage for the Cray 1. Someone is building or rebuilding a Cray 1 bench, and he's put a lot of effort in it already. He made 600 parts of plywood and everything just to... And they're going to work on it, and people are just randomly volunteering to help him. It's really professional. This guy really knows what he's doing. So at the end of the event, probably we will have a Cray 1 bench look-alike made from plywood and everything.
You know what a Cray 1 is, obviously.
Yeah, a Cray 1 is the iconic server model. Yeah. If you use Visio, Microsoft Visio, if you're really out there, then if you want to place a server, you place a sort of bench-like structure, and that is a Cray 1. This Cray 1 will be rebuilt over here. It's sort of like the Xbox One, but better.
Yes, excellent stuff. Anything else anyone wants to add, or should you be all busy setting stuff up?
How was this? You put up all the towers, right?
Yeah.
How was the help? What did you get from everyone?
Mostly the towers were built by the building crew, which delivers the tents, etc. A lot of volunteers came to help build the towers, climbing in them. Towers are covered with white tarps. That's all done by volunteers. People just come here and say, "Can I help?" And I ask, "Do you afraid of heights?" And no, okay, come with me in the tower.
And this stupid answer.
People just come here and help, and it's awesome. That's a lot of work. Still needs to be done, but.
Well, you better hurry up, because
most of it is done.
Yes, no, it looks awesome.
This is the arcade guy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi. Fine. I'm Bren.
What are you doing? You're building an arcade, I heard.
Well, yeah. I'm. I try to keep the arcade machines running, keep the pinball machine running.
Yeah.
Because, in a few days there'll be like more than 1,000 plays on mostly each of them.
Yeah.
So stuff breaks down and needs to be fixed.
So obviously. What type of machines have you got?
A few pinball machines, older generation, like solid states, and a few dot matrix, like Adam's Family, Getaway, some cool stuff, Simpsons. And we also got like six or so old arcade machines, like one Asteroid, which is a really cool old one, obviously.
Yeah.
But also some homemade arcades. So it's an arcade cabinet, but actually inside it's like a MAME simulated arcade machine. So you have like 60 games in one arcade and stuff like that.
Okay, brilliant. Yes.
Cool stuff.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks very much for the interviews. All the best, and I'll be around tonight to actually participate.
You'll love it.
All right. Talk to you later. Hi, everybody. We were talking earlier about a Cray 1, and I'm here with...
Jeff, Eka Poincaré.
Hi, Jeff. You're the guy who's actually building a Cray 1. Well, the Cray 1 was one of the first supercomputers, is that correct?
I suppose so. I'm not sure it was one of the first supercomputers, but it was at least one with a very nice design.
It's like a... like. How would you describe the design would probably be best?
Well, it's a three-quarter donut. And the reason it's a three-quarter donut is because the inside of a donut has a shorter waist for cables.
Yeah.
And that's why they designed it in this special way, so they can put the high-speed lanes on the inside of the supercomputer and slow things like power and cooling went on the outside, longer distance side of the donut.
It's... To me, it always looked like something that a park bench around a tree would be kind of what you...
Yeah, it would look like that, but without the tree.
Yeah, exactly, the tree part. So the computer part was actually on the inside, or...?
The processing side was on the inside, so they had the short distances between the boards.
Yeah.
And as I said, the power equipment and the cooling unit tubes with flow would be set on the outside of the donut.
Oh, okay. Did you ever use one of these things? Or?
No, I think I'm too young for that.
Okay, yeah. And so why? Why are you building one?
Someone just messaged it on IRC that they wanted to have this built, but they were still looking for someone, and I took a look at it, and it's an interesting design to try to replicate because of the shape and... Also, they want to move it afterwards. They don't want to destroy it, so it had to be built in a reusable way.
Yeah.
And then you have to use some tricks. So this design will be built of 14 different parts actually, or 14 segments. I'll put it that way. They can be taken apart so they can move it to somewhere else, make some additional features to it.
Yeah.
And it had to be lightweight,
yeah,
because you have to carry it, and it had to be within budget.
Yes.
So,
how much is the budget?
For the wood, it's about 300 euros.
Okay. And you've got a whole go of MDF caught up underneath.
Yeah.
Ready
so
to
in
rock.
Total, I ended up with about 600 parts of wood.
Oh my god.
That's cut to size, and now we still have to screw and glue it together, and hopefully
it'll all fit.
It'll all I made some errors, so we have to make some adjustments on the way. But in the end, I hope we'll have a three-quarter circle that looks like a Cray 1.
What could possibly go wrong?
You can by accidentally saw into a table. That's not yours.
Break a drill bit, as
you
your assistant
break,
has shown us.
Break a drill bit. The best part is that you cut pieces too long, and as far as I'm aware, I have a few pieces that I cut too long, so that's okay, I can shorten them, and yeah, there are always some cutting errors, so...
And you're just making out the template now, and then you're gonna...
Yeah, this is a template, so we can put the parts in it. It's a template for the side panels.
Yep.
For left and right side panels, so we can reproduce 12 left panels and 12 right panels in an easy way.
And then, are you a carpenter by trade?
No.
No.
I'm not a carpenter by trade, no. It's something to take your mind off technical things.
Yes. Although, building a Cray 1 supercomputer seat is probably not that far from technical things.
It's another challenge.
Did you do the drawings yourself, or did you download them free from the internet?
I looked at I didn't really find a lot of detailed drawings, just the basic measurements, and I went from that to draw the plans of it.
Okay, well, thanks very much for your time. Hi, everybody. I'm right beside the OHM 2013 sign, and I came across BrewCon, which has the tagline "Hacking for Beer." And of course, I had to come and interview. Your name is?
My name is Kuhn.
How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I am not too bad. What is BrewCon and why are you here?
Well, BrewCon is a Belgian security conference. We are having a conference every year. And now, since last year, it's going on in Ghent, a very nice Belgian town.
Yes. That was... You were mentioned on the Paul.com Security Weekly podcast, if I recall. They were over for that, was that correct?
Yes, that's right. But then we were still in Brussels. But it's the same conference, same nice atmosphere.
And it's going to be in Ghent, or it has been in Ghent?
It has been, and it's also going to be in Ghent again.
Okay. When is the next time?
So, the next one is the end of September. 26 and 27 is the conference. And right before the conference, we have our security trainings.
Okay, and what would you like to... What's likely to be covered there?
In the trainings?
Yeah.
Well, we have several for a lot of penetration testing. So we have offensive techniques, some model penetration testing, SCADA. Those things are all covered.
And would this be more aimed at the European security scene, or would this be international, global?
It will be international.
Okay. And do people come from all over the world, or is it mostly European white hats?
Yeah, it's very mixed. We have a lot of Europeans, of course, but also a lot of Americans coming by. Yeah, it's quite mixed.
Okay, and what's your setup here? What are you planning on doing today?
Today we're here to promote our conference. We're just here enjoying the Ohm atmosphere. It's very nice here.
Yeah. And is this conference a professional thing that you do? Is your full-time job? Or
no, absolutely not. It's completely run by volunteers.
Yeah.
We just enjoy working for improving the community, giving something to the people in Belgium, because it's the only security conference in Belgium going on.
Okay.
And that's why we like to organize it. And with sponsoring this event, we like to give something back to the community.
Okay. And how much is the event to go to?
That I hope you can cut out.
Okay. It is not free. Let us...
No.
So, we're waiting for that. Looking around the tent, I see soldering irons and beer. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, so a normal ticket to come to BrewCon is €160.
Okay.
For the two-day conference. That includes food with the conference.
Okay, that's not too bad. Expensible, I presume, if you're in the trade.
Yeah.
And what sort of trainings are you going to be doing ahead of that?
So yeah, it's a mix, huh?
Let's see, offensive techniques, Ruskid in 3 days, pen testing, smart grid, and SCADA. Lessons in mobile penetration testing, the art of exploits, injection flaws, hacking PDFs, always fun,
yeah.
Practical malware analysis. And that's from the 23rd, 24th, 25th of September in Ghent.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Hi, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another excerpt from OHM 2013, and I'm in the Learn to Solder booth.
No, actually, it's the Blinken area tent, and we offer an all-day soldering workshop for everyone who wants to come and learn to solder or improve their soldering skills they may already have.
And your name is?
And my name is Arne Rossius.
Nice to meet you. Now, as many of you know, soldering has been covered before by Mr. X in an excellent series on HPR. Right now, I'm sitting here in front of a soldering iron. What do I need to do?
Yeah, first you need to have a project you can solder.
We have loads of projects, Raspberry Pi projects, and I have loads of things that I want to solder. I've got the plans, got all the kit, but I have no idea how to do the actual soldering part.
Okay, so there are basically two kinds of soldering.
Yeah.
There's the older technology, through-hole technology, where the components have leads, which you put through holes in your circuit board,
yeah.
And then you solder them from the other side, usually.
Okay.
And the newer technology, it's called surface mount technology, or SMT, or SMD for surface mount devices, which is the SMD parts. And those are just put on the board on one side and soldered from the same side, so they don't need holes. And if you want a very dense board, you can put them on both sides.
Oh, okay. Cool. So say I wanted to just put a resistor onto a PCB and straight through. How would I go about doing that?
if you want to solder a through-hole resistor,
yeah.
you just bend the leads so they can fit the holes.
Yeah.
Then you put it through the holes, and then you take your soldering iron with a medium-sized tip.
Yeah.
Put it next to the lead, which is coming out of the hole.
Yeah.
So it touches both the lead and the ring around the hole.
Yeah.
So both warm up. Then you add a little piece of soldering wire.
Yeah.
And it flows around the pin, and then you can remove the tip, and it's finished.
Do you have something that I could solder here, or can I buy a kit? Or
you can buy a kit.
Yeah. What have we got?
We have.
Don't worry about
kits hanging on the wall, and you can just choose one.
Let me see. What's what have we got? We got an 8 LED LED that does what? What did they do?
Which one?
What did they do?
The more simple ones on the left side are just flashing their LEDs in several patterns.
Yeah.
So they're just for show. And the bigger ones for the more experienced solderers, they can be programmed with all sorts of animations. We have one which can do color. They can all do grayscales. So the colored one can do 512 different colors.
Cool.
And the largest one has 520 pixels, but only one color.
Okay. And so, say one got a kit, what would you need to do to solder it up?
Sorry?
What do you need to do to actually solder two components together?
Yeah, you,
do you, you have something there that you can show?
Usually you don't solder two components together, but you get a circuit board in the kit. Or if you have your own project, you can have a circuit board made, or you can use a perf board, which has holes in it everywhere, and you just put the components wherever you like and use uncoated wire to connect the parts.
Okay, can I get a heart-shaped one and start with that?
Yeah, sure. It's a good beginner kit. You want the through-hole one or the small SMD one?
Oh, the through-hole one. Let's live on the edge, shall we?
Okay, this is the kit.
Okay, got a kit. Ooh, lots of bits and pieces.
Everything inside you need, including an instruction sheet.
Okay. We laugh at the face of instruction sheets. Okay, and in the kit I've got a PCB with some LEDs, a power supply, and a chip. So, do I need to read this, or can you tell me?
I can tell you some things.
Okay, you tell me the shortcut.
But open it anyway so I can show you.
Okay, I'm opening it, and I've got a heart shape.
And you need a soldering iron. Oh, it's already
on.
You can use this one.
This one. Is this hot? Ow! Yes, it is. Yes. Okay, and I've got a PCB. A controller. Presumably that's this chip-like thing here.
No, this is the socket, actually. This is the controller.
Right. With the pins bent. Does that matter?
No, you can usually just bend them back if it's not too bad.
Okay. Got some LEDs, some resistors, power supply, and... Okay, this is going to make great audio. But anyway. Okay. Where to begin?
Yeah, and the instructions usually have the order in which you should solder the parts. So in this case, you would start with the resistors. It has some general soldering advice first. If you're new to soldering and you don't have a teacher around, you can read how to do it in the instruction sheet.
Okay.
So, and then it starts with the parts. Resistors first, then the IC socket, then the push button, and so on.
Let's start with the resistor, shall we? Okay, tell me what to do. Resistor looks like this.
Yeah, the one with all the colored bands around it.
Does it matter which one, or are they all the same?
They're all the same.
Okay, and they've got different colors. Okay, show me what to do first.
Okay, first you bend the leads so they can fit the holes, which is done like this.
Resistor stuck in the center.
Should look like this.
Okay, bend the leads so it fits the holes.
I don't know if that is close enough, but we will... Yeah, you have to, for this kit, you have to bend them really close to the resistor. So I usually hold them like this, and then you can just bend it.
Okay, and when he says hold it like this, he holds the resistor and then pushes it down. So I straighten up the leg, and I try and push it as close to the thing as possible. Okay, so It's now bent.
So now you need
to. Where does it
go? Yeah, on the other side. You can see it has some text on the board here, which appears in the instructions too. So
okay,
now you're holding it the right way up.
Okay.
And then you can have a look at the image where the resistors go.
There and there. That looks about right. I'm so going to make a mess of this. Okay. Yes. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is correct.
Okay.
So
turn it over?
Yeah, you can turn it over, but if the resistor will fall out, you can just bend the lead slightly outward. And
on the bottom, so that they don't fall straight out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yes.
It can't fall out anymore. No, don't put it there. It's wet.
Okay. Don't put it there. Do not put it on the soldering pad thing. Yes.
Sponge.
Sponge. Sponge. That's the word. Yes.
Just put it on a piece of paper.
Piece of paper that can go on fire.
It won't.
Okay.
Then you have to have some solder wire. This
one
is adequate for the EZR kits. For the SMD components, you would usually want some smaller diameter one, like 0.5 millimeters.
Okay, I'm ready to rock.
So now, take your soldering iron.
Taking the soldering iron.
Then you put your soldering iron next to the joint you want to make.
So
just the iron first.
Iron first, yes.
Yeah, and then you can add some solder wire now.
Soldering wire, nothing's happening.
Oh, but it's on, it should. Yeah, it's enough.
It's enough.
Ah, remove the iron, and you're finished.
My god, my first solder! I'm so... Actually, that's not too bad.
Well, it looks very nice.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. X. He did a series on HPR. Okay, so I put the soldering iron next to the... what do you call it? Leg of the LED?
Yeah, lead. I think it's a common term. Yeah.
And then it comes off. Okay, you see there? It kind of went over onto the other... track, but it's okay.
Yeah, but there's no bridge, so you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. So that went back, and that's it. So that is my first solder. How do I know that worked?
You don't know until you are finished, and you can try if everything works.
Okay, cut me.
Yeah, now you have to cut off the remaining leads, which poke out on the bottom side.
And that's it.
That's it.
Wow, thank you very much.
One done, five to go.
And then all the other bits and pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm sure the rest of the listeners won't need to, are not interested in the remainder of this. Thank you very much, Arne, for the interview. And your website is?
Our website is blinkenarea.org.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Beside Nido, I'm talking to?
My name is Sven Hagemann.
And where are you and why are you here?
Well, I'm here because my boss sent me.
You lucky, lucky bastard.
Well, I'll tell you. I actually was already planning on coming.
Yeah.
So I saved the money on my savings account. And then I told my boss I was going there. My boss said, oh yeah, I'm going to pay that for you. So I had the money still on my savings account. And if you have money in your savings account, which you already planned on spending, you're still going to. So I took my girlfriend with me.
Awesome. And why are you here? And who is your company? And do they have any vacancies at the moment?
We have a shitload of vacancies because we're always looking for programmers. I'm a programmer. We mainly work for the Dutch government.
Okay.
The company name is Red Nose. You can check out the website of rednose.nl, of course.
Okay.
And what we do is we make document creation software. And as you know, what the government does besides spying on you is create documents.
The Dutch government would never spy on anybody.
You know, I just realized that I work for them, so no, they don't.
No, definitely, and don't stop my citizenship request either.
No. They're actually quite cool people.
Okay, and what type of coding do you do, and that sort of thing?
Well, I sort of started off as a small guy doing offline applications.
Yeah.
And then as the web progressed, I went into web applications. And now I sort of do this in-between thing where you have like the web side, the web side,
yeah,
and also the offline side, and they sort of come together. And now the mobile space is a whole new thing. And that also comes into play. And because we make like this one big application, I'm sort of all over the board. So
okay.
I do the back end, I do the web front end, and also I do, you know, Android or iPad applications, and those are native.
Okay, yeah. So I'm getting Java from that. I'm getting
Cocoa. Well, Cocoa for the iPad, but that's actually my colleague who does the Cocoa programming. Okay. Android, we do Java because we want a native experience. Although I don't want to touch Java with a 7-foot pole, so we sort of say, one of my colleagues who left now, I wonder why, he did the Java side, and I do the PHP Symfony 2 backend, and we use UE3, which is or YAU3, depending on how you want to pronounce it, in the front end, and that's for the administrative side of the front end, because you have like we have like this front back end where you have like people who manage the application. They have an advanced browser, and then it's the government, so they all work with Internet Explorer because that's a very secure browser, and not the latest one, but actually like 7 or 8. So the actual front end is like, you know, flat HTML because it has to be compatible with a brick, basically.
Okay. Cool stuff. And what have you been at? What has your OHM 2013 been like?
It's been fantastic up to so far. I met some cool people I know from a very long time ago. So currently the sun is very hot.
It is.
And I have a headache because of that, but also probably because last night I didn't want to go to bed too late, but it was, you know, 5 p.m. and I was kind of drunk, so that sort of indicates that OHM has been pretty awesome up to this point.
Very good, and you're getting paid for it.
Yes, I'm getting paid for it as well. I don't even have to I thought I'd had to pay my free days, but my boss said, no, it's all covered. So if you're interested in working for a company that does these things, contact me.
Okay, very cool. Have you been to any of the talks, or where have you been hanging out?
I've been to most of the talks, unless today, because it's so damn warm, I cannot stand the tents. But I've been to a lot of the talks. Most of them are about, you know, economic politics. I've been to some hacker talks, and my favorite talk up to this point, and I already saw it, so it's a very good talk if you ask me, is by a guy called Tef, and the talk was called It's Terrible to Be a Programmer, or Coding is Terrible, something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And I like that talk only because I can connect with it, and that kind of indicates that I'm a simple-minded person, but I like that talk a lot.
Fair enough. Are the talks here being streamed or being available online somewhere?
They are
presumably
streamed, yes. I can give you the streaming URL, but by the time this is on Hacker Public Radio, people won't have much use for it.
No.
However, they will be available afterwards in H.264 format, Tiora, and probably something else. That is being done by Team Rehash, which is in the tent behind this, which I don't know why I'm saying it, because this is radio, but whatever. Anyway, they will be put online later, and you can check on 2013.org by the time they become available.
Okay, and if I remember, we'll put a link into the show notes to that talk. Anything you're looking forward to seeing?
All I've been looking forward to is, like, my friend Breno. He came here to talk, and I was looking forward to that. I was looking forward to TEF, and that has already happened today. Mm-hmm. I was kind of looking forward to Julian Assange because it was such a special thing, although I have to admit I kind of fell asleep halfway through because he's a very long talker, and eventually...
Was streamed in, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Otherwise, the British intelligence forces would be swarming around the tents here.
And furthermore, what I've been looking forward to is, you know, going onto the radio here, having a fun time, meeting cool people, and that's basically what this event is about: meeting cool people and inspiring people.
Yep, it's pretty cool. What I found interesting about the streaming was, if you go around to the other tents, either people just sitting around benches hacking on stuff, and then on their laptop is the streams of the events that are happening in a tent, you know, 100 meters away, but they're still hacking with the same mates that they have back at home.
Well, yes, I think that's mainly because of the weather, because it's way better outside than it is inside one of those tents, which is a pity for the speakers, because if you're a speaker and you're sitting there and there's like four people, I don't think that's very motivational, and it doesn't make you very energetic to get your point
across.
And you have to actually inspire people at this conference to, you know, to make your point. I think that's one of the most important things, is that you come across clearly and inspiring. And if there's four people, I guess that's kind of hard. Yeah. Although,
but then again, you have no idea how many people's
that's the point, right?
Watching on another stream. Okay, with that, thanks very much for taking the time, and if you notice anything cool, come up and catch us for another interview.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And if you want to do your own show, just email admin@hackerpublicradio.org and we'll send you the FTP details.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Ken. I'm here at OHM 2013 and I've just come across a Debian developer. Hi, how are you and what's your name?
Hello, I'm Tomasz. I'm not Debian developer, I'm Debian maintainer, so I do not have full rights to upload any packages yet, although I can upload my own packages without any supervision.
So what's the difference between, I mean, what are the different levels then of contributing to the Debian project?
The highest level is the Debian developer. This is the person who can upload any package, either package he or she maintains or any other package which can be used, for example, when other developer is missing or there is
on vacation or sick or something, security issue.
There is critical bugs. And also Debian developers have full voting rights, voting for Debian project leader to change constitution or other legal documents. The notch below is the Debian maintainer, who can upload his or her own packages, the packages he or she maintains, but only those. So you need proper Debian developer to agree for you to upload those packages and to list them in the special centralized database.
And what packages are you responsible for?
I'm responsible for three Python-related packages. PyCuda, which is to run computations on NVIDIA hardware using CUDA on Python. PyOpenCL, which is similar to PyCuda, but it's using OpenCL. OpenCL is open standard to run parallel computations on most of the types of hardware, on CPU, on GPU, on FPGA, on DSPs and similar hardware. And I'm also managing PyTools. This is a helper package which is used by both PyCuda and PyOpenCL.
What's the use case for either of these applications?
Currently, the GPUs have vast amounts of computing capabilities. CPU, usually current CPUs have 2, 4, sometimes 6 cores. Mm-hmm. The GPUs can have up to 2,000 cores or something like this.
Seriously?
Yes. The NVIDIA Titan has 1,536 cores, and there are some higher levels which combine few of those together with very fast memory. So this is really very powerful computing machine, but you need to be able to compute this because those machines offer a slightly different programming model. You do not have one thread of execution, but you to fully utilize them, you need to run 10,000 threads or something like this. So you need to manage those threads, you need to manage memory on the GPU, you need to manage the dependencies between memory, you need to decide which threads are running which kernels and so on. So this is quite complicated task. Fortunately, OpenCL and CUDA help with this. And PyCuda and PyOpenCL allow for those to be used with Python, so you can use more advanced programming techniques like metaprogramming, generating code to be run on the GPU on the fly, templating this and doing quite sophisticated workflows.
But would you normally do that in Python or not? Would you not go to some sort of specialized language like Erlang or something for massively parallel stuff?
The Erlang is used for parallel stuff to run on the CPUs. On the GPU, as I said, this is slightly different hardware and you need to program it in different ways. There are some performance related things you need to take into consideration. For example, threads are grouped in are in the grid. Grid in, is divided into blocks, and blocks, each block is divided into warp or wavefront, depending. Warp is on NVIDIA hardware, wavefront is on the AMD hardware. The concept is that that you are making this grid of threads, and each is responsible for one item of the data, but to get most of performance you need for those threads to be running in so-called lockstep, which means that all threads are doing the same thing or almost the same thing. If the threads are diverging, for example, one is going into the if branch, another is going into the else branch, it will mean the very severe performance drop.
Oh, okay.
So you need to be able to run to program, to write your program in special way. To prepare special functions called kernels to run on the GPU, and you are getting the best performance when those kernels are utilizing the hardware to the fullest possible extent. For example, using as many registers as you can to avoid having to access the global memory, to use shared memory, to share some state between threads in one block, to decide whether you use more caching or more shared memory.
Yeah.
And this requires either writing few different kernels to run on different GPUs, for example, different on Kepler, on NVIDIA Fermi, on the Titan, or you can use the PyOpenCL or PyCUDA and use dynamic metaprogramming when you have some template and you generate code. You look into the hardware description, you ask hardware, okay, how many threads can you run, how many registers do you have, how much memory do you have, and then it's like, okay, so I can have this block which will be 256 threads by 256. Oh, and now I have a little bit less memory, so I will drop it to 128 by 128 threads.
Okay, and if you're writing a Python program, is it just, do you need to modify your code in order to make it compatible, or would you, or does it not matter?
Currently, you cannot run directly Python code on the GPU.
Yeah.
You need to write kernels in the special language, which is similar to C.
Yeah.
This is the same case as for wrappers for OpenCL, for Java, or for C. You, in all those languages, you need to have code, the kernel codes written in the special sub-language.
Yeah.
And this means that. This means that in reality you have two programs. So you have one program which manages all those objects on the GPU, kernels, threads, memory, and the program making some computations, which is run on the GPU and which is written in the special special language.
Yeah.
And this also means that performance of the CPU side is not so important, because the growth of the computations are on the GPU, and CPU has only a limited amount of work to do. It just needs to coordinate everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why using Python does not bring any disadvantages.
Okay.
But at the same time, you have more advantages like garbage collector, like more classes and stuff like this.
So you have a task that you want to use on your GPU.
Yes.
Would you need to write a Python piece of code and the other code, or just does the Python code derive the other code?
That depends on the task, because if this is some general program, yeah, I would need to write both Python code to manage this code and the code to run on the GPU.
Yeah.
But PyOpenCL currently have helper classes,
yeah,
which already implement some common tasks like reduction of the collection of items, to have one item like a common prefix sum, to have some to perform operation on all of them of all of the elements to summarize them. It also has the mapping functions. So many of the functions, thanks to this dynamicity of PyOpenCL, are already written, and then you are only calling the appropriate classes.
Okay, cool. And why did you decide to do this on Debian? Why did you wake up one morning and decide, oh, I want to manage this code as opposed to something else?
You know, that's the funny story, because I've heard about GPU computing 4 years ago at HAR.
Yeah. Which is the predecessor to this one, yeah.
Yes, when the guys from the GSM village were talking about breaking the GSM code using the GPUs. And I decided, okay, this GPU stuff is interesting, and I looked into this, but I decided, okay, writing this in the C is low level and I'm a little bit lazy, so is there any better way to run it? And then I found PyCUDA and later PyOpenCL, and I said, okay, this is good. And then I learned it, I had some successes, and then I decided, okay, but it is actively developed software, so doing it manually is a little bit burden to me. So I said, okay, let's try to make some package so I can update it automatically. And then...
One thing led to another?
One thing led to another, and I made some packages, and then I decided, okay, maybe I could also upload those packages to Debian so someone can help me manage those.
Yeah.
And that's the long story.
So it all started here 4 years ago. Cool.
Yes.
Awesome stuff. Have you been here long? Have you been to many talks? What's the coolest thing you've seen so far?
As the programmer, I found today's talk about how to be good or bad programmer very interesting and very thought-provoking.
Yeah.
Also, the talk about radiolocation using the special army equipment was very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And another interesting talk was the talk about the food habits and official food advisory from the government and why it is wrong.
Oh.
Was very interesting.
Okay, cool. I'll put links to those in the show notes if I can remember. Yes. Otherwise, they're on the ohm2013.org site by the time you hear this. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, and tune in later for another report from ohm2013 on Hacker Public Radio. You are?
Alec Wright.
And you are?
Chris Monroe.
And what are you two guys here promoting?
I'm handing out these flyers for EMF Camp, which is a hacker camp inspired by the likes of CCC and the Dutch hacker camps in the UK, because we thought, why doesn't this thing happen in the UK? And now it does, as of last year. So we ran it with a capacity of 500 people last year, and it's hopefully going to be a two-yearly thing. Next year, we're planning to have a capacity of 1,500 people. So this is going to be running at some point in the summer, somewhere in the UK.
Okay.
We're still looking for a site, so if anyone has any recommendations, please do get in touch. And our URL is emfcamp.org, and you can reach us on Twitter at emfcamp, and we also, I believe, have an IRC channel on Freenode, also emfcamp.
Okay, perfect. And what is it going to be, similar thing to this, tents, hacking, beer?
Well, yeah, exactly. Just all every hacker type getting together in a field, setting up villages, you know, exchanging ideas, all the usual sort of stuff.
Yeah, the usual mix of lockpicking and electronics.
Drunk soldering.
Radio, drunk soldering.
Have you been to Old Camp at all last year?
No, I went to EM Wave, which was some kind of a sub event in Canary Wharf, London. Mm-hmm. So that was on the MS Dubnitz, a boat, and a disbanded fishing vessel. So that was really cool.
It's just a one-day event to sort of fill in between last EMF camp and the next one.
Do you go to any of the bar camps at all, or what's your organization? Are you in uni, or what's the story? Why are you here?
Well, I'm a member of London Hackspace, and so I tend to hang out that crowd, and so we went to CCC in 2011.
Yeah.
That's the first one I went to, and then EMF camp last year. Now I'm here, and hopefully going to make a tradition of going to these hacker festivals.
Cool. What has been the coolest thing you've seen so far?
It's been pretty good all round. I don't know.
Been to any of the talks?
Some of the security-related ones have been the ones I've been focusing on more. We had one recently, which was about Dutch alarm systems, and he went quite in depth into the protocol and how flawed it was. That was pretty good. I quite like that one.
Why am I not surprised?
I've just been to a talk about copying keys from photos and why you should never show your keys on video.
Copying is actually making a physical replication of the key
from a photo.
All right.
Or a frame of video.
Oh, very nice.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, but generally all sorts of interesting stuff to see all around the campsite.
And where are you camped? What village?
Our village is over in the northeast corner of W Field. We've got a little tent with our logo on. So if anyone wants to drop by and have a chat, please do.
Okie dokie. Tune in later for more exciting updates from OM 2013. How are you doing? Who are you?
Bacon Zombie.
And you are?
Crossy.
And what are you doing here? Other than melting in the heat, poor lads.
Came to see talks, but at the moment it's just drinking beer.
Right. the Irish stereotype is intact.
Drinking beer and trying to stay out of the sun.
Yeah.
Yet again, the Irish stereotype is safe. You guys have hacked your tents. What have you done?
We stuck Mylar sheets onto the tent, try and reflect the sun, get rid of that bit of radiative heat from the sun, and not boil in the tent.
So what are you doing over here? What's the... Who are you representing at all?
I think most of us are part of TOG Dublin, the Dublin Hackerspace. There's a couple of guys from Milk Labs and 901 Labs, the Hackerspace in Galway as well.
Okay. How is the Hackerspace developing over there?
Well, we started about 3 years ago, and we've steadily grown. We moved to a new space. We have quite a good space in Dublin, and it attracts a lot of people. We've events on throughout the week, from lock picking to craft night to the odd open social, which of course beer is involved.
No harm in that. No harm in that. And were you involved in the whole setting up of the hackerspace or not?
No, I came in after the first year of it. But most of the guys were originally from the local 2600 meetup.
Yeah.
So there's still an active 2600 meetup. It's kept completely separate from the hackerspace, but quite a few of the founder members came from that group.
Okay. You listen to Hacker Public Radio by times, I heard. Okay. You owe me a show. Why did you come to OHM? What was the reasoning behind that?
Been to a couple of conferences before. I was at the camping event in Berlin 2 years ago and really liked it. And knew people who went hacking at random. Said it was really good. So
This is the previous one to this?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. What, any talks that you've been to? Any talks that you must see?
LTE security. That was pretty high level. It doesn't go into the kind of detail that we like, but
Yeah, I heard a few people talking about that actually. Expected a little bit more. So. Say no more, say no more. Right, so listen, I'll let you off. Back to your beer. Enjoy the sun or lack of it. And tune in later on for another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and as promised, another segment here on Hacker Public Radio. I walked into this tent. What's the name of it?
Hardware Hacking Tent.
Hardware Hacking Tent. Excellent. And I'm talking to?
Robert Fitzsimons.
Because he's got a Ask Me About My Project sign on his laptop. So Robert, tell me about your project.
It might be a little hard for to see on radio, but it's a visual project where I'm showing off some...
Right, that's it. I'm caught. It's fucking useless.
I'm showing off some... RGB dot matrix displays that I've built over the last year or two, and I'm showing off some wearable electronics projects as well, where you combine electronics with fashion items or clothing items.
Can I take some photos?
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me about it all. So where do you want to start?
I've been building electronics for. As a hobby for like a number of years now, and most of my projects involve LEDs and usually copious huge numbers of thousands of LEDs, and I started using these red, green, blue colourful LEDs in a lot of my displays. The brightest one I have here, I kind of went with a very you see the striping?
Yes, I do, yeah.
This one I kind of designed, I wanted it to be like a very compact, almost like a tablet style, where you couldn't see any of the workings of the design. It's just a very kind of slick
Just to describe it here, say it's about, I don't know,
40 by 32 pixels.
Thank you very much. And it's about the size of, you know, two hands, one on top of each other, I guess, would be an international, highly accurate measuring system. But it's kind of cool, and it's got dreamy shapes, like clouds floating there. Yeah, I'd say now if it was stoned, it would be awesome. But it's actually pretty awesome now as it is. So on the back, what have we got?
It is the microcontroller that we're using to control it is the Embed from NXP. No. So it's a more powerful version of something like the Arduino platform that many people will use to their projects. It's got more memory, more performance for generating the colorful displays.
How did you do this this display?
I designed it up in using open source electronic design software
called
GEDA, GEDA,
okay.
Yeah, okay. And G-Scheme. You know, put together the boards, send them off to some manufacturers in the UK. Hopefully, they're correct as a one-off or two one-off boards, and they came back. And then I built it last year for the EMF camp in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
I'd had the modules for the display in my drawer for about 3 years, like we all do. I said I must do something with them,
and then you were going to an event.
Yeah, so
yeah.
You just kind of okay, put it
on. And
all
you
together.
Were doing it at the last minute.
Oh, at the last minute, I was assembling it in the tent in the Hardware Hacking Tent in Milton Keynes last year, in the middle of the night, hoping not to make mistakes when you're soldering hundreds of solder pads onto. A circuit board. It didn't work in the end, and I had a mistake. So you've got a blue wire to connect up, fix the mistake, and it didn't really work on the time because you end up not having enough time for some project like that. I did get most of it assembled, but the project itself kind of, I just had it showing like red, green, blue, and not the colourful pattern that I have it showing today.
Okay, that must have taken hours to get working.
The software or the solar? Both.
All of it.
Yeah, because you spend many days iterating on the design of the PCB, then you send it off, and then there's very little you can do in that week or so that it takes for the boards to arrive in the post. The other projects that I have are the wearable technology. They're using things like the Lilypad Arduino. Using the Lilypad Arduino or the Adafruit Flora displays. So these are circuit boards that are designed to be sewn into clothing.
Can you wash them?
Yes, carefully, like hand wash. Yes. Hand wash. The circuits have big pads that you can sew conductive thread onto. This is the conductive thread here.
All right, yeah.
So this is a silver-coated cotton thread.
Just looks like regular old thread to me.
And you just use kind of normal sewing or kind of embroidery techniques to sew your LEDs or your buttons or your switches and other circuits into the design. Make sure not to cross for the threads to touch, because that will short your circuit out. Connect up and then use your Arduino programming environment to upload code to it to have it to react to your movement, the environment, proximity to external sounds. Like, they have sensors,
Wi-Fi detectors.
They have accelerometer sensors and light sensors, movement, buttons. You can make buttons just by, you can have a switch on either side of your glove, so when you put your hands together, your lights turn on. Some people have made bike lights, so when you raise your arm out, that your arm might light up, or a turn signal.
That's
indicator. You can have a speedometer, so the motorists realize actually you're doing the speed limit and they don't need to overtake you. At least back home in Dublin.
Yes.
And they've got some other kind of RGB pixels as well, so you can really decorate your items, accessorize your clothing, use them for parties and
that's
Christmas
what
and Halloween.
What do you wear? You don't wear any of this yourself, though?
Not really. I'm more of a geek who likes to build things.
Yeah.
Not such a geek who likes to express himself wearing flashing lights.
And run the risk of electrocuting yourself also.
It's only 3 volts. So it's not likely to do too much damage.
Fair enough. So, you're from Ireland?
Yeah. I came over with a group from the Tog Hackerspace in Dublin.
Yeah, I just spoke to them. They're sitting at the tent drinking
burning
beer, and you're over here representing them.
Well, I'm indoors. Well, inside a big tent. It's as indoors as we get in a tent.
They're melting outside.
Yeah. Well, I'm melting inside.
Well, that is actually pretty fantastic. Thank you very much for showing me your stuff. Is there anything else I missed, or I should have pointed?
I don't think so.
No. Cool. What are you running?
On this. On these?
Oh yeah. What are they?
These are solder badges. It's a very simple learn to solder kit. You solder the battery holder, a pin, and the LED in place, and you get a flashy badge. It's great for kids.
It says I can solder.
And kids of
all
ages.
I just soldered for the very first time.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Today. I'm fucking so chuffed with myself.
Yeah.
And what's your laptop?
What make is it?
Yeah,
it's an MSI something. It's a US laptop because I like a US keyboard.
Yes,
I just like it.
And what are you running on?
Debian.
Straight SID or?
It's probably a testing unstable. Hybrid monstrosity.
Yes, that runs and runs and runs. Never upgrade at the weekend when developers are off.
I think I upgraded. No, did I? No, I did upgrade. I ran an upgrade like on Monday. It's Wednesday. It was probably like on Sunday or something. Over the weekend, I did an upgrade.
Never a good thing. You always run and said you should always do it on a Wednesday. That way the guys who've worked the weekend, there's a few days for them to get it fixed.
I kind of probably more run testing than
regular SID.
Unstable's in the list, but testing is higher up in the sources.list file. So.
Well, cool. Thanks for talking to me. Is there anything you want to, anything you're going to go and see, or are you stuck here for the whole time?
I think I'll probably stay here for more. That's what I tend to do. All the recordings are recorded, or all the talks are streamed and recorded. So you can watch them at home in your leisure, and you get to interact with people, because that's the most important thing about being in a camp.
Yeah, I completely agree. I need to find somewhere to base myself, because it's too hot walking around.
Yeah.
All right, thanks a million. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Ken Fallon, and we're here again at OHM 2013. And I'm in the hackerspace booth of?
Of the Open Garage. Well, we don't call it an official hackerspace. It's very close to what a hackerspace is, but we're a little bit different.
How are you different?
Well, the thing is, I just gave this in a lightning talk, so I know the pitch now.
Okay, excellent.
I'm a skill collector. I try to collect all kinds of skills, and I have my garage in my garden.
Yeah.
It's a big garage, and I have all the stuff there, all the metal and woodworking, all the classic stuff, but also electronics. And
we
have
and
the CNCs, and I have a lathe, and we have the CNC here. I can show you that.
The guy has a CNC machine. Okay,
yeah,
now I'm
pretty
interested.
Big, pretty big. Come and see. So
that's fucking cool.
This is a...
Yes.
Oh, sorry. That's
oh, that's okay. Far ahead. Meanwhile, while he's doing that, I'll take a picture of the CNC machine, if you don't mind. How did you come by a CNC machine?
Well, we got it from a school that was planning to dump it. So they were going to dump the machine. And we came just before the dumpster, so and saved it, and now it's working again, so we can use that.
Are you Dutch based?
We're in Belgium, in Antwerp.
Oh.
So we're not all that far away from here.
Oh,
but
okay, fair enough.
But we could bring lots of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. How did you get it all here?
Well, we had some big transport. We have the trailer next door as well.
Oh, okay.
We're a huge village of about 30 people, so there's lots of stuff and lots of people that are willing to transport.
So you've got this garage, and you just say to people, come on by, and
yeah, well, my wife, she had these crafting clubs every week, so
yeah,
her friends came over. And I like the hackerspace culture a lot.
Yeah.
Okay,
but the problem is...
About
it too? Wait a second.
No, it's okay. Fire ahead.
I like the hackerspace thing, but I have children, as you can hear now.
Yes.
And I also want to babysit and be at home and work in my spot and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I invite people over just like my wife did, but we do technology-based things in the garage, and it's a real technological garage with all the stuff there too, just like a hackerspace, but it's at my place. I'm the boss and the dictator, but
the rules
are pretty anarchic, and everybody's free to use whatever they want to and come in and bring
and,
a drink.
What if somebody chops their finger off, or then they sew it back on, I suppose, so long
well,
as they
that's their own. That's their own problem then, yeah.
Cool. So what have you got here, aside from a CNC machine?
Well, we have a CNC machine. We have a big Tesla coil outside.
Yeah,
that
didn't draw my attention.
That we can play with. We have a bunch of 3D printers. Well, I think we brought the whole lot. I think we're quite expensive in all the technology that we bring. Telescopes. We have big beamers with us that we want to install the next few days still, so... We're just building, we're working on, making something here.
Okay, very cool, very cool. And 3D printers, and have you found that the people who come for your wife's stuff and the people who come for your stuff, that there's a mingling of the two, or
there's
a mixture of the cultures?
No, it's quite different cultures. We see that. Yeah, the wives are not very interested in electronics, so we're not very interested in the thing. So the overlap isn't there yet. Yeah,
I did interview a guy who was doing wearable electronic.
Exactly, that's a nice mix. I like it as well, but we never managed to do
that.
There
yet. So that thing's been printing all morning. What are you making on it?
He's making a quadcopter parts with it. But unfortunately, power failed on us for a couple of times already. And I think it's already a third or fourth try.
And you have to restart from scratch.
From scratch, unfortunately. So, and it takes a few hours to print the part, but
it'll
be fine.
Cool. Anything else that you want to? Or is your anybody, any of our listeners around Antwerp, if they're there, where can I direct them to you?
If people are in Belgium and they're all free to come over at opengarage.org. We are in Voorsbeek, which is near Antwerp in Belgium.
Okay, cool. So bring a beer. Bring
well,
yourself.
The,
bring
the
a beer
thing
bring
is, you have to bring a drink because that's our economics.
Uh-huh.
I keep the empty bottles and we take that in for extra bolts and stuff, so we have constant stock, and that's the economics that we have in the garage. So bring a drink, bring a project, and bring a friend, so that our network expands and we always have new people to talk to.
Absolutely excellent. Thanks very much. The link for this will be in the show notes of the show.
Okay,
talk to you later.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.